Lost my heart and hope to die. If I ever, ever told a lie, feelings and guilty just said, choose a bad place when you're dead. Washington, he never lied.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
This is Sir Weirdington Esquire, and unlike your previous Sir Weirdington Esquire, I know the name Lisa Frank. The fool you had on last week, the feeble simpleton, couldn't remember a simple name, Lisa Frank. Furthermore, I've looked up her face accidentally. I was trying to look up the name of that famous designer of incredibly twee teenage girls trapper keepers, and the search results came up with an actual photo of the actual Lisa Frank, and my God, she has seen the void.
She absolutely looks like a human, not a human, an alien that is wearing human skin. But it doesn't fit quite right, like the bug monster in Men in Black 1. It just kind of, feels uncomfortable to look at that person move around.
But the macabre human flesh exterior has been rigged into a smiling position.
Into a rictus grin.
It's truly terrifying. Speaking of truly terrifying, oh no! Oh, I was about to prompt you to get started with this week's episode, but I've got to do a recap, don't I?
Yeah, I was about to say, we're doing this in the wrong order. I have to introduce you to what we learned last week.
Oh, I don't wanna. What happened last week? Nothing.
Zip, zilch, nada.
Nothing.
Part two of a fucking weird ass nothing chapters where they hung out in a tower for a while.
It actually hurts. It's actually physically painful to try and think about. Some disconnected events that I think are supposed to be relevant. Somebody is paying random hobo, random people from outside the hoof to, market Goose Stepsville to the outside world is a good place to come to. At a guess, presumably, as part of the Enclave's sinister plan to annihilate everyone, to declare war on all life. Everywhere, forever.
We have declared war on the ground. The ground itself. We will kill the entire Earth.
It's just pretty fascist, I gotta say. That's fairly in line with... I want to distract with, isn't it pretty extraordinary that, Captain Planet villains are just now a thing? That, the mask has come so far off on our society that, it is impossible to parody Nazis anymore. There just isn't a way to strawman them anymore. The positions of the average reactionary are so completely bonkers and unwielding, unyieldingly evil that war on the ground on the Earth, this is what we seek to accomplish, is not, a cartoonish, exaggeration.
It's not just a fact of life that this is what we're going through now, and we're gonna have to continue going through.
You fell for it, you fool. I was counting on you to go, you can't distract from your job that easily.
Listen, it's the day of the fucking alien raid. People are Naruto running into Area 51 as we speak. Not actually, it's probably just going to be a music festival. That's recuperation, folks.
I haven't looked at the news too closely, but I think a bomb might have been dropped on them already. Again, it's impossible to know what is and isn't a joke anymore. So
yeah.
It's entirely possible that the U.S. Air Force has dropped explosives on the crowd.
So the thing I watched before this all happened, earlier today actually, talked about how long before this raid actually was planned to go down, Fed showed up to the guy that organized the Facebook group, shook him down, and the whole thing has been kind of respun as a, like, music festival, basically, is what's going to happen in the desert. With maybe some Yahoos trying to run the line, but, like, it's been utterly defanged as, like, a movement, and has mostly just become, like, a, like, recuperative effort by the American government to, like, paper this whole fucking thing over. So I don't think, like, I don't think any especially terrible thing is going to happen. And if it does, I'll be thoroughly shocked, because, like, they've already, like, declawed this entire fucking thing into just another bunch of weirdos in the in the desert thinking that there's aliens doing that again.
See, okay, so in reality, all hope is lost, but meanwhile, in Pony World, there's a door to Twilight Sparkle's porn closet.
Yes.
That will remain forever sealed due to shenanigans required to make the plot move in the direction Somber requires. Because God forbid there be, like, a story where there's consequences and, like, events flow from each other, like, from one event to another, instead of, like, random new events just compiling onto each other and the heroes just wander around aimlessly. Like, no, our heroes couldn't possibly have any use for a centuries old Twilight Sparkle worshipping cult. That would make things too complicated. So yes, we had to come up with some excuse why we had to shake those losers.
Yes, they're from the original plot, their, like, so
direct capacity to influence the world and accomplish any of the protagonist's goals, of which the protagonist has none, and everybody else's goal is to follow her around like, yep, lost idiot puppies.
They have no goals. There is no plan. This protagonist is moving around by virtue of being the protagonist. Things are just happening to her.
So anyway, I have a mild headache. I'd probably do some with some more sugar or caffeine. Rampage killed, like, three people because someone suggested that Lacuna was the most dangerous person in the room. We find out that Lacuna is... I wish I could remember the number of times I've seen this dumb idea crop up in other places. I think there was a Digimon villain who, like... The final villain of the first season of Digimon was, like, a greatest hits of everything that ever died in the digital universe. And there was one other... Like, it's on the tip of my brain, and I haven't bothered to research it in the time since then, because I'm not sure what search query I would give Google. I don't even want to offend or I don't want to waste Google's time with my shots in the dark. But anyway, so Lacuna
Gestalt
is,
entity made of sadness.
Yeah, all of the hive mind, all of the Alicorn hive mind's bad feelings are all compressed into this one Lolita horse. Very, very, very large Lolita horse.
Big, small.
And yet she is, like, not constantly weeping and like, lashing out and, like, my God, again, like, ideas that are just not, like, left on the table and not meaningfully explored. Like, you're going to tell me that this person's this gestalt of, like, all of Pleasantville's bad feelings. Like, fucking Rick and Morty did this idea better than you, Somber.
And it sucked in that, too.
Yeah, it sucked. It sucked really hard in that, and they still did a better job. Like, they, like, because, like, the writers, like, the storyboarders, or at least somebody in that writing team, like, did a bunch of, like, interesting little things with that idea, wherein, like, all of Morty's negative feelings includes his capacity for creativity, like his like the gestalt of, like, everything he thinks is bad about himself, like, spends its time trying to, like, make things, like, quietly in the back, like, and Rick is so broken and bad and wrong that he thinks, like, compassion, like, love for the people in his immediate family is something that, like, is holding him down and something he needs to get rid of. Like, a true libertarian.
Okay. Yeah. Like, that's kind of the angle, I think, that this goddess stuff is being spun as. But, like, I think that's giving it entirely too much credit. And it really just... Because there really is just a line. There really is a line from BJ at some point in the story that basically announces... Because the story just goes wildly nonsense later on. Where she literally announces that, like, she is the kindest person because she's literally made of sad. Like she can empathize with everyone because she's made of sad. And, like the thing is that, like... I don't know, listeners, I don't know how many of you have depression. Like, statistically, I think it's, like, what, like, 20% of your population or whatever. I'm just pulling a number out of my ass. But, like, I don't know about you, but I've certainly had days where I've just, like, didn't want to get out of bed. And the idea of multiplying that feeling by hundreds of thousands of, like a cacophonous mind of hive mind, and all of their sad is being mushed into one horse. Like, I feel like it'd be like a much more outrageous reaction than just like, man, I hate myself sometimes.
So really, it like that kind of emotional way, like, I am somebody, I think I suspect it might have something to do with my diagnosed attention deficit, which comes packaged with like massively excessive feeling. I'm given to understand that's part of the medical diagnosis, is that like a severe attention deficit comes with like over amped emotional response. I've been so angry or sad at various points in my life that it is like the effort to like restrain, like keep myself from yelling or crying, has like actually once in high school in like 8th grade or something, we as a class were being punished for like the substitute's like bad report of us as a class, and in order to keep my dignity over like the incredible unfairness of it, because there was like 3 people in the room that was whose fault it was, but the substitute like blamed the entire class, and there's no way to like say that. Like the situation was such that like none of us had any credibility to be believed to try to explain the situation. I tried to restrain myself from crying, and it literally strangled me. Like, I literally turned blue and fell out of my seat. And so, like, and on a related, like, a lot of people, and this is how I myself, like, very unhealthily dealt with it, in order to, like, get out of bed when you're in a state of, like, literally crippling depression, like, sometimes the only thing to do is to fall on like primal fight or flight reflexes and just get angry instead. Like just like sometimes the only way to move and act while in a state of like ultra depression is the only option is rage.
So we got to get moving on. So I don't want to talk about this too much more, but I just would like to like, I guess I just want to point out that in both cases, like both this and the original work, the goddess is a very like poorly constructed antagonist, because like it's the cliche of hive minds and collective thought being just innately evil, because like there's just a bunch of like a huge amount of human fiction is about, yeah, puts way too much emphasis on individualism. So like
my libertarian ego,
so because the goddess sucks in the original story, kind of it's amplified in this by a idiot trying to make sense of the bad thing about, like, instead of trying to, like, just recontextualize the goddess as being different, it's this, like, combo of, like, trying to make sense of how it works, and also shitting on it constantly, because there's a lot of weird, oh, the goddess isn't shit, like, storytelling in this for some reason. Like, she's, like, it's not important, but my main sticking point is that in both cases, they do a really poor job of contextualizing the kind of, like, so, like, I think the interesting thing to me about the goddess as a horror creature that is kind of badly thought out in this is that it's not really a hive mind. It's described as a hive mind, but it's more like there is a specific will that is being brought over. There is a combination of like four minds that dominate the entirety of the hive mind. Their will is so great that it overrides everybody else's, and that's what kind of causes them to be evil. Because that cacophony of like four minds is wrong about how to fix the wastes, and that's what's causing all the things. And it's the horror of being not sublimated into a like collective will, being sublimated into an authoritarian will is what I think is personally terrifying about the goddess. Like you are part of a hive mind, but you don't even really get to say you like your mind doesn't matter, and it's not from like a nihilistic like. Because you're one individual doesn't matter in the collective. It's you don't matter because like Big Brother is in your fucking brain. Yeah, is in your fucking brain telling you what you should think and feel. That part is terrifying to me. Like that's the part that's like that like the sublimation of ego in that sense is terrifying to me. But it's not done very well in the original story, and it's amplified in this, which sucks.
An actual like hive collective like. It would be that like the head of the collective, the queen of the collective, would in many ways be subject to the subordinate minds as much as the subordinate minds are subject to them.
They're, yes.
Like they're the composite of all the thoughts beneath them. But like what they're proposing is like kind of wildly inefficient. Like the best you could like try and angle something like that is that everything, like somehow all of the personalities of every single individual in the collective is scrubbed, and their brains are just used as raw like RAM, like just raw processing
that's,
power.
Well, that's the thing is like that you could interpret the goddess as being that. It just does a poor job of explaining that. Is my point. Like,
yeah.
If so that is the case,
it's not clear which case it is.
Like, if that is the case, cool, but I don't think it does a good enough job to explain that is the what is going on with the goddess, sorta. It's more complicated than that, obviously, because it's a whole other story, but, like, it's a thing that really sticks with me, because Lacuna is a character I like a lot on the surface, because I think she's a very interestingly, characterized character, and I like gestalt entities a lot. I'm a sucker for hive minds and stories, and I like the idea of a person that's part of a big collective will. That's an interesting idea to me. But those surface-level aesthetics don't outweigh the really problematic nature of the way that she's interpreted by the author, which is the whole thing we talk about in this entire podcast, but Lacuna is a very obvious symptom of that. But I guess I should actually
It was Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. Johnny the Homicidal Maniac in a big beginning of third act twist, I guess, like or sort of like anyway, there's a big twist toward the end of the comic after Johnny the Homicidal Maniac dies. He has a divine comedy sort of arc where he goes into the afterlife and finds out that his soul was a cosmic dumpster. That he exists to, like, be some sort of, like, runoff site. And that's why, like, he was filled with, like, the impulse to kill. And, like, you know, torn between a bunch of different, like, twisted impulses. And eventually kill himself as sort of a, I'm trying to think of the term for when you registry clean, like he's some sort of universal recycling bin for sort of the cosmic computer, and that's why he's been so awful all this time. And then he wakes up to find out that like, oh no, you have a new hallucinatory friend. Whether or not that any of that actually happened, you now have to confront you now have to confront the badness that was within you all along. You're free of the external evils that were pouring into you day and night, and now it's just you, and that is also bad.
We got a mosey, a little bit.
Fucking chuds are deeply miserable and cry all the time inside, and they have no empathy. that's the thing to take away from how dumb Lacuna is as a
as opposed to us, which are deeply sad inside, cry all the time, and do have empathy.
Yeah. So it's not a measuring stick. Your level of misery is not an indicator of your capacity for empathy. There, done. End of that entire chapter. For a lot of noise happened, but nothing else of substance.
Sound and fury signifying nothing. All right, so we gotta mosey onto the next chapter, where things do happen. Well, it's because it's an important point that I want to talk about a lot of the time.
We had some thematic things to grouse about.
But also, I want to put off this chapter. Fuck. So, chapter 36. Fi got real mad at this chapter for a bunch of reasons. Like there's gonna be parts that are gonna be like, we're gonna have to come together as a community and work through them, because I'm really unhappy about them as like plot points. But we gotta move on. So chapter 36, victims. I denoted this chapter as the Sanguine does a bunch of evil shit chapter to establish he's the bad guy. So get ready for that. So the crew bamps back into the Hoof, but they're on the outskirts of it, near like the rail yard that they got split up on way back again. Like in like book one, they got like separated really early on. That's when like BJ found Chapel and all that shit happened. And then they like so it's the rail yard there. They get told that they can't get any closer because the innervation is just too bad for it to work. And the guy basically just refuses then to get them any closer. But the only important part of this is they banter for a long time about how they're going to get back into the city, and their plan is to use the rail lines. So they get a rail car back and working. They get it all greased up. A particular important note about MLP and subsequently this setting is that trains have two operating methods in the setting. One of them is coal. The other one is horsepower. So they have since they have a brand spanking new cyborg whose legs will never tire, they just hook Blackjack up to the train car, and they're gonna get her to pull the whole crew.
What's she powered on again?
So she eats gems and metal now to power her legs.
Okay, so my brain did shut down there for a second. So coal, crystals, and what are the main power sources?
The power sources of trains in this in the show was either coal power, but there's also horse driven trains as well.
Okay.
So they got a horse driven train, and they hooked Blackjack up to it because she's a tireless cyborg with very little meat on her anymore, and now she has become engine. It's not really important, but it's just kind of a funny interaction between them. They go on the rails for a while. They meet up with another horse that's doing the exact same thing named Goliath. We will never interact with this character again. So this is the only thing I'm going to talk about him. He's just to establish that like Red Eye is becoming more important in the sequence. It doesn't matter though. That plot point goes nowhere.
How many times are we going to fucking happening. Do this? Meanwhile, in an unrelated story.
Bad guys are doing bad guys things in bad guy town. God. They go down the rails for a while. When they stop, when they see that like the like school they hit out in chapters ago, before they were going to siege that slaver camp for Megamart, they find that building is on fire. It got completely burnt down. Everyone, because like a bunch of the gang they helped out was also occupying the area, and they're all dead or gone. They find a scavenger amongst the wreckage of it, who's been like, he's just like a ghoul scavenger, or whatever. He's not important. I don't even think he's given a name, but they muscle him for some info, and he explains that apparently like a bunch of badass expert mercs have just showed up in the Hoof for the last 2 weeks, and they've just been fucking kicking down everywhere. So like the mines got hit, fucking Megamart got hit, one of the other places that they hung out in for a while named Stockyard got hit. Basically like all of the major settlements on the east side that aren't like the Reapers have all gotten nailed by these mercs. And they're really confused why. And they find, like, I think it's, like, written on the wall in blood, like, security, like, is written on the wall as some sort of, like, diabolical message. Oh, there's a lot to cover in this chapter. I'm going to have to try and go through some of this parts quick. But yeah, they check out the mine. They find, like, another security message has been written there. And there's, like, a recording on, like, on a string. I don't know, like, a tape deck of a string for Blackjack to listen to as she's going into the mine. And there's kind of, like, a juxtaposed scene that would be cool in, like, a comic or something where, like, the audio is playing while she's walking through the mine and there's, like, this creepy tension building as she's, like, moving through as we're hearing, like, events from the past of Sanguine is recording his own thoughts about how he's convinced that even though everyone thinks that Blackjack is dead, that he knows that she's alive, and it doesn't matter if she's dead anyways because he's dead if she isn't. So he has to believe in that. And he's trying to send a message to her because he wants the EC1101, the Maltese.exe, and he needs it now. He also mentions in his rambles that, like, something got woken up in the fucking core and he's terrified of it, whatever it is. And that's what's pushed his time schedule up real hard. And just to up the ante of the, like, sending a message, we get revealed that he fed the entirety of the Pecos gang, one of the gangs Blackjack liked, into the Rock Crusher. Because, you know, he needs to do bad guy things to establish that he's a bad guy now. Like, I don't necessarily hate the idea of, like, Sanguine becoming a more serious, significant villain in this. It's just, it's very obvious when you have shoot the dog moments to, like... Like, he hasn't done anything in the story so far, so we don't have no reason to hate him. We just kind of, like, dislike him, vaguely, and think he's dangerous. But, like, we need him to do bad guy things now because he needs to be, like... You know, he needs to be someone that we kill. And not feel guilty over it. Blackjack, in, like, panic, trying to get to the Rock Crusher, like, trips and falls into the mine's main cavern and, like, falls into the charnel pit of, like, bodies of all of the mushed up Pecos gang. Her and 21 are there for a while because it's revealed that 21 is, like, caught up with her because in his words, Blackjack always does dumb, reckless things by herself and doesn't want her to, like, go out alone. He's playing being an accountability buddy for this. Fucking, they find, like, Dusty Trails, the head of the Pecos gangs that they, like, after they killed the original leader, is still alive. She'd been, like, half garbled up by the Rock Crusher and then, like, healed up so that she wouldn't die because that way she could send a message to Blackjack, which really just reiterates everything that we were already told through the audio file, so it doesn't really, like, feel like it matters that she's still alive. It's really just there so that they can mercy kill her with a bunch of painkillers, and so Blackjack can blame herself over everyone's death. 21 literally beats some sense into her over this and, like, basically is hitting her in the face, telling her that this isn't her fault, which is a funny image. Like it's supposed to be a dramatic moment, but it's just like, you can't be sad! like we don't have time for this anymore! This isn't allowed to be your fault anymore! It's a funny image. But we also get told that the gangs are heading towards a flank and they need to, like, go there next. They figure out that, like, they kind of, like, work out, like, what's happening, like, why these places are getting hit in the order they are, because it feels kind of random and they're, like, trying to, like, suss it out. And, like, it's this really elaborate callback to, like, earlier on Blackjack did a clever thing where she, like, switched what pip buck she had so that, like, the program was on a different, like, thing and whatever, and yeah, she gave a dud.
She lost the pit buck in a bet, and she gave the old busted model with a merely broken screen. So if the fucking thing had a USB jack, it'd be fine for the villain's purposes.
Well, it doesn't have the file on it because it's a magic bullshit file. But what it does allow them to do is it allows to track all of her previous locations that she traveled through. So they've been, like, so they hit all of them in that order based off of like where they are, because she's, I guess it's just it's to find people that Blackjack has helped and murder them for because of it, to send a message to her to like,
I don't know. Sanguine, somber watch, Serenity, the Firefly movie. The bad guys killed all of the good guys' friends. Because it's bad.
Cause it's
the baddest thing we could do. And it also completely wrap up the series. Like, oh, there's just no place left to go. No one left to talk to.
So I will get to that. But that's really what this feels like. Is hey, remember book one and book two? Well, good news. You'll never have to think about them ever again. these characters will no longer be appearing in the story. Either because they're dead or they don't want to interact with Blackjack anymore. God, there's a weird plot point about them getting a wagon together because like the train breaks, and they need to, like,
this really is just about shrinking the world.
Yep,
even smaller.
We need to do away with all the faction stuff. It feels like between book two and book three, Sombra like stopped caring about the faction stuff so much and just kind of wants to like make it all go away so that, like, he doesn't have to think about all the like groups that they've interacted with so far and how they would interact with each other.
He needs more page space to talk about zebra clams that did not appear in the story.
But yeah, they put together a sky wagon, or not a sky wagon, a regular wagon, which is actually, like, between this and the train, this is actually, like, a cool thing for Scotch to actually do for once, because she's a mechanic, so, like, her whole thing is, like, getting to, like, work on tech and make things work again, and I like that she gets to do anything in the story and get to show off her skills.
I thought that she had her mind wiped to get her skills back, and it didn't work. Did she get better?
I don't know. That plot point goes nowhere.
I guess during that 3 days,
she got over her fear of robots in 3 days.
Thus making the entire an entire chapter worth of whinging,
and hand wringing over whether or not it was a good idea to do.
Supremely pointless.
Well, I mean, like, we've talked about this before. Some of this stuff is kind of understandable when you're doing, like, a linear, you're not going back and editing plot points, kind of problems. But there's better ways of doing this sort of stuff than the way that this has been done. Anyways, I'll get back to that in a bit. But BJ also works on relearning her magic, because since she had her horn chiseled off, she, like, hasn't been able to use magic very well over the last few days, last few chapters. But the only part that's important about this, because she like learns to reuse her telekinesis by picking up some playing cards that were on one of the tables they were in, because they're in a garage now because they're fixing up the wagon. The only part that is important about this to me, in ways that is infuriating that I did not realize until this reread, this is important to me and me alone. The Queen of Spades in this story is represented by Luna. Like the queen of Equestria, or like one of the queens of Equestria, one of the princes of Equestria, whatever. It's not important.
The bad guy.
This
one.
Is important. Yeah, the bad guy one, the dark evil one that got converted over to good. Yes, the moon princess Luna, Selene, Mun. But it's important to me. She's the Queen of Spades. This is important because on Blackjack's ass, her cutie mark is a pair of cards. One of them is a Ace of Spades, and the other one is the Queen of Spades. This will become relevant in 30 chapters when I pull all my hair out.
Nope.
But just keep that in mind. Put a pin in that for later, for months from now. But yeah, they hook Blackjack up to a wagon, so Blackjack is gone from gun, and she now has become car. She is now a vehicle of transport. Which is just like, just to talk about it for like 2 sentences, Sombra sucks at making cybernetics seem cool. Like they don't do, like, we've had 3 chapters now where Blackjack has had these cybernetics and she hasn't done anything interesting with them. Like, she's done a couple of weird things where, like, oh, I've got a hand now and I can hold my whiskey with my whiskey holding robot hand.
It's bad.
But there's no showcasing really of like the technology doing anything interesting. Like there's kind of like some offhand mentions about the idea that like she doesn't feel like her legs hurt, like her legs don't hurt because they're robotic, so she can just keep walking. talking forever, and that's a cool concept, but, like, it's just, it's weird that, like, you turn your main character into an anime robot horse, and you haven't done anything cool with them yet. It's really weird to me. And except, this will become a persistent
rig her up problem. Rig her up to the plow, Bessie.
she's become robot fucking car. Anyways.
She has become Turbo Teen. No, Turbo Horse.
Oh, that's terrible. But yeah, BJ and the crew then race to Flank. along the way, because Flank is like covered in innervation pools because, of course, it's the town of Hedonism, and therefore, like, the bad mojo is bad mojo or ear around them. But they've noticed that it's gotten, like, way worse in the area, which is insufferable for reasons that I'll get to in a bit. But they get into the town, and they're like, okay, everything's been, like, there's a bunch of smoldering everything. Like, a lot of buildings are on fire. There's a lot of damage has been done to the town. But they don't have time to think about that because they're immediately attacked by a bunch of drugged-up fucking aggro horses in pink body armor for some reason.
It's Lanesh is why.
Oh boy. Oh boy, is it. They fight a bunch of pink drugged up horses.
I wish I was joking too.
Yes, I wish you were joking too. But they fight them off, and then they like realize after hurting a couple of them that like the scalpel shows up or triage. I don't remember what fucking like nihilistic fucking asshole doctor this one is. Shows up and like shoots them up with some painkillers to make them go to sleep. Because we find out either here in this scene or in a later scene that like Flank is so fucked up now that they don't have the ability to like have a security force, so their plan is to just take a portion of the population of their town willingly because they're all drug addicts and hype them up on combat drugs whenever like something threatens the town, because they're like, this whole thing about hedonism is a slow decline into raiderism. Like, not raiderism as disease, but raiderism as the, like, raiderism in the normal story where they just, like, have to parasite off of local other places. Because they eventually rename themselves to the Fiends because they're no longer part of the Finders. Because they're fiends for drugs, which is a reference to Fallout fucking New Vegas.
Why wouldn't they just have... No, okay, not gonna say anything. Yes, I am. Any... Why not? Why wouldn't they just be a massive soft power? Like, why wouldn't, like... They like rival the Mega Mart in terms of like they've got shit that everyone needs and like everyone has a vested interest in keeping them safe and prosperous because it's where all the like entertainment is.
Because weird, this is a cautionary tale about what happens when you build your economy around drugs. You become evil hedonists that can't help but destroy everything around them. Also, this is why the innervation is getting worse around the area too, because their diabolical hedonistic lifestyle is corrupting the area around them. Fuck! Like, I got this is the chapter that's made me angry in a bunch of ways I have not been in a long time about this story. Like, I've yelled about a lot of shit in this story, but, like, there is so much to unpack with a bunch of the psychology of this fucking chapter, and part of it is this shit of, like, Flank goes from a town of, like, kind of goofy hippies that are bad because the writer has a weird problem and a lot of hang-ups with, like hedonism as a concept, and like they devolve into like murderers that survive off of combat drugs and is like super slaneshy because like sex and drugs and rock and roll is bad, I guess.
You know, I can't fully blame Somber, because this is actually interesting. I recently heard some stuff about how like the Manson murder case, the Manson trial, was really weird, really weird, really inexplicable. Sort of much like Hitler, Charles Manson committed a lot of crimes, and a lot of crimes, and he was caught for most of them, but he kept being just let back into the wild. Like, just like he had the world history's most lenient parole officer. A series of them, actually. And he was also involved, during his various times in prison with I've forgotten the name of it, but the basically the CIA acid experiments.
MK Ultra?
Yeah.
Where is this going, I guess?
Oh, the U.S. government has had a vested interest in long-term painting hippies as inevitably they're all going to become Charles Manson. Charles Manson is where all this free love talk gets you.
Hedonism eventually leads to, like, the collapse of Rome.
Is an intentional conservative narrative that has been, like, carefully constructed in the American mind and beyond. So I can't blame Somber for, like, having this horseshit in his head too much, because it is an intentional propagandic narrative that it has been, like, actively constructed and pursued for over 60 years.
Oh, for sure. But that doesn't, like, make it, like, any less, like, hard to swallow, I guess, is my point. Like, it's the whole theme of this podcast, where, like, this story is a fascinating, like, breakdown of, like, all of the problems that I have with broader society, and it's fascinating how, like, how much this stuff mirrors in, like, and this is, like, it's every layer, like, pop culture to, like, as unpop culture as you can get, it's in every fucking level. Like, there's a total lack of subversion, even in stuff that is desperately trying to be subversive. And that part's fascinating to me. This part's just still really insufferable. It's a really bad, ugly narrative that is far more telling than I think Somber is intending it to be.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you know what they say about Amsterdam? Like go on vacation there to, like, try out the rainbow variety of totally decriminalized weed, but watch out for those axe wielding leather daddies. Like,
yeah, they're gonna get you.
They're just everywhere, like rampant. Like, it's
there's also a really bad narrative here too, when, like, Bad Doctor and Caprice show up, and Caprice basically bends over backwards talking about how Biju is right and they should have just listened to her and her authoritarian, like regime change, and they should have become more aggressively authoritarian, or they wouldn't they wouldn't have had to deal with this at all. There's a fucking horse who is named Citrine, who I don't think ever happens to exist again after this point, but she just sits there basically to bitch about how the broader theme of this chapter and the broader theme of this book is about how Blackjack should have just gave Sanguine the fucking pip buck in the get-go, or none of this would have happened. But she doesn't... Her point doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter what point she makes, because she's not there to be right. She's there to be defeated with logic and reason, because she's effortlessly defeated by the dumbest person in the fucking world, Blackjack, who just tells her, well, it wouldn't have mattered because Sanguine wants to do so much more eviler shit with it that the hoof would have been 10 times as worse. So, like, you're just going to have to sit there and, like, you cannot tell me how I defend America, because it's I get results. And that part sucks. Because it also, like, it's obvious that this is what it is, because she's also a throwaway character we'll never see again, that she, like, voices opinions that might be criticisms that have been made towards this story before, and this is a, like, insert of those things and how they would be effortless defeated by the, like, the philosophy of this broader book.
Does anybody know what the fuck Sanguine is, like, what their end game is? Like, what they're even trying to accomplish? Like, is
not
is
a fucking clue.
Yeah, so, the, like,
we're told that Project Chimera, it creates a bunch of monsters, but we don't know what he's going to do with it. Like, we don't know what he's going to do with it.
Bad enough. Like, but wait a minute, they're not even particularly mindless. Like, there was that one that was, like, perfectly conversant. They're just weird to look at.
Yeah.
They happen to be violent because they're, like, relentless and whatever it is fucking Sanguine's trying to accomplish. Like, this is a little bit torn here, because on the one hand, like, yeah, don't capitulate to people who, like, have hideous means to go about whatever it is they're trying to accomplish. Like, I'm very much of the opinion that, like, the ends can never justify the means, if only because the ends can never escape their means. Whatever your end is, it includes the means you tried to use to accomplish it. So, there's nothing good Sanguine could possibly be aiming for. But at the same time, this is also fucking Jack Bauer, like, if there was a bomb in the nuclear, there was a nuclear bomb in the Empire State Building, in order to get the code, you had to torture. Would it be acceptable torture then?
Yeah, and the answer is obviously yes from the minds of the writers. So, like, anyone that tries to argue against it doesn't matter.
To my mind, like, technically the answer is yes. Do whatever it is in that insane thumb super hard on the utilitarian scales. Sure, do that thing, but that doesn't establish precedent for, like, when we don't even know that there is a bomb anywhere to be found. Like, that does not then authorize you to, like, torture in case there happens to be a bomb in the Empire State Building you don't know about. A conservative tactic is putting the thumbs on the utilitarian scales and presenting completely bug nuts, like, improbable scenarios, and then extrapolating the answer to that situation down to, like, a daily standard operating procedure.
Yeah, broad policy that is built from the ground of preposterous edge case, which is, like, the most basic of the conservative playbook. But fucking god. So they need to go to Chapel now, because they figure that Chapel is the next on the block, the chopping block. But we also get unloaded on what the new bad guys are for the story, because we've been told that, like, mercs have been mashing everywhere that BJ's been hitting. So we don't get told who they are now, but I'm just going to say who they are now. Their name, but, like, we get told what they're about. We are the new faction are called the Harbingers, and their whole gimmick is that they sort of worship the core as, like, a god and a paradise that they're trying to attain. So, like, they're a very religious order who believe that, like, the hoof is a bountiful area of the waste that, like, shit just physically, like, food and bullets and everything are just provided by the environment, which is technically true. And they believe that the source of this is the core, and they're trying to get the core, like, the thing to the core, and they, like, follow some prophet that's telling them that, like, this is the answer to salvation. BJ go, like, we get told that their camp is, like, just down the way from flank. So BJ wants to, like, assess them, and she's going to go talk to them first. This is the part that got me really unhappy. So along the way, BJ and Rampage have a small conversation, because Rampage is in, like, full therapist mode again.
Have you considered Rampage strangling a baby?
Rampage asks why BJ is so normal after being violently raped by a gang of men. Because they talk about the idea that, like, Scotch isn't handling that very well, because, like, she's having, like, kind of a sort of, like, survivor's guilt problem where she like, blames herself for having Blackjack being put through that, and she's traumatized by that, which is reasonable. But Rampage also casually, like reveals that she's also been violently raped, like, a lot. I talked about this before, but she was, like, enslaved for the first, like, dozen, like, years of her life in the wastes, and she was used as, like, a fuck toy, basically. Her words, not mine. And she reveals that she's way more messed up about it than she reveals, than she's been letting on. She's just old, so she's able to, like, hide it well, which frustrates me, because this is one of those hack writing things where it's implied that the reason why she wears so much armor and tries to look so tough and is, like, weaves barbed wire into her hair and all that shit is because it's a physical metaphor for her ability to protect herself from, like, would-be rapists, which is I'm trying to think of, like, why, like, I'm trying to extrapolate, like, why without breaking too much into, like, why this is kind of a hacky writing sort of trend to do. But a lot of male writers, when they write women who've been sexually assaulted, think it's really smart and clever, and they're the only person they've ever had this thought that, like, oh, we'll physically manifest them by making them try to get tougher because they're trying to hide the pain, because that way you can have the big emotional breakdown scene of them, like, you know, being more vulnerable than they let on. But, like fucking Rampage is, like, six different characters, and, like, I'm not even just talking about the fact that she's, like, a gestalt entity. She's, like, a gestalt entity is one of her characters. Immortal badass who is above everything is one character. Utter nihilist is another character. Fucking, like, rape survivor is now her own, like, is its own separate interpretation of her. Like, he just can't seem to settle on, like, what the fuck is Rampage? Because I don't fucking know. I don't know who this character is. She is such a mess of so many conflicting ideas trying to cram into one identity.
Yeah, I'm burnt on it, because, like, we've already had, like, the entire conversation about this, which was that, like, pick a concept, asshole. Like,
yeah,
that, like, complexity and depth are two different metrics. Like, you can have all the complexity in the world and it be shallow as a
puddle,
as a milk spill, and then you could also have a supremely simple character that is deep as the ocean. Yeah, the more complicated you make a thing, the less easily it reads, the less coherent it is.
Yes.
In the last time we talked about this, I even talked about, like, okay, she's a rape survivor. Wouldn't it be more interesting to reflect on the fact that, like, she ultimately escaped by realizing the sort of almost Lovecraftian, like, existential terror that, like, oh, nothing could stop her all along, like, realizing that, oh, I'm a undying monster and could have brute forced my way out of this situation at any time. Like, that's terrifying on its own, to the disgusting and, like, mind-rending to know that you could have just left, the door was never locked, and then on top of that to realize that no door is ever locked to you again. the mind-churning freedom of like not no one can ever impose consequences on you.
Reality of immortality.
The worst anyone could do is somehow manage to, like, pack you in a crate and drop that in the ocean, and even then, like, the tides would erode it and you would eventually get out. But, like, yeah, she, and because, like, he's a chud and wants to write this, like, rape trauma survivor, like, doesn't think for a moment that, like, in 600 years she hasn't healed. Like in 600, yeah. like in more than, like, in well over a dozen contiguous lifetimes, she hasn't, like,
gotten over this at all.
Like, outside of having, like, multiple contiguous identities, like, because of the multiple identity thing, like, leaving that aside, let's say that she's a single gestalt entity that is a compromise and an intermelding of all the sub identities, which also should have happened inevitably over 600 years or so. Anyway, putting that garbage aside, like, somebody who's that unthinkably old must have reinvented themselves, like, countless times. As time passed and culture around them changed.
The only one we get is a one for one where she used to be our lost because she was a member of the Crusaders, and then she killed her kid, and then she bailed on that life entirely and came back as Rampage, and that's the only time that's ever happened, apparently.
Yeah, she has to have done that, like, fewer than five times.
I think the thing that we're really stepping around, that, like, that I think is the problem that I've always had with Rampage, Rampage should be the main fucking character. She's too complicated to be, like, a B-plot. Like,
I mean, even then, even if she works almost better as, like, a kind of a Jack Sparrow. Like, I don't think... I think she suffers for us stopping to, like, be forced to try to understand her. Like,
so I think so much
better as a like force of nature, as this, like,
I think you're right under our interpretation of her, but the strict reading of her, of like literally all of the points about her, she's too complicated to be a main character, like to not be the main character. But like our version of her, where we got like everything out of her, and she's just like an immortal, and she's just crazy, like she's just an immortal, and she's Deadpool, whatever. And that's the version that we want. Yeah, I agree with that version of her being like a secondary character. But like the actual version of her that's in the story, that's overly complicated and has like a dozen different backstories, that version of her makes more sense to be a main character, in my opinion. But I think you're right. The version that we've kind of considered in our heads is the Jack Sparrow type is more compelling.
Or even
as,
like,
as a secondary.
Being 600 years old means that, like, it, for a long form story, like, she could be your Quint, like Quint from Jaws, like sort of a famously memorable, eccentric, and dangerous like person in the cast. Like she could have like half a dozen different like doll's eyes stories because she's been traumatized by 600 years of shit. Like she. Like you could make kind of a grim, only sometimes funny joke of the number of backstories she has just by virtue of time.
Yeah, I think I got to get to the second half of this part that really like frustrated and infuriated me, and then we got to get moving. But the actual really shitty part about this is that like Rampage keeps like badgering Blackjack about like no, you need to talk about this. Like you're not over this. Like you need to like. You need to talk to somebody about this, like in her own way. Like you need to like, you're not coping by just pretending it didn't happen, and like Blackjack just gets so infuriated by this. Like she just sees Red and beats Rampage to death, and like fucking in that moment, I just threw all my fucking papers in the air and went fucking who the fuck is this? Like cool, I guess there's no Blackjack has had no characterization. She's had no character growth since like. She beat that guy to death in the stable like fucking 10 years ago. Like she's exactly the same. She is the same shitty bully. Sees Red and does dumb shit and kills people because she's just a violent cop thug. I guess that's cool. I'm beset with rage over this fucking like this is meant to just be like a moment where like oh no she's. You know she's not over it, so she's reacting violently to this revelation she's trying to bury in her head. But like, this is fucking like this is like a fucking like exemplative of like all of the time she does this in the past before. Like this isn't a new occurrence with her. She's not become newly overly violent. She has always been this violent about things.
Yeah, this would be a shocking and maybe even interesting twist for any other character. But this is just you know. Old, same old pathologies.
Yep, same old violent murderous
new,
Nazi thug.
New day, old Blackjack.
Yep. Cool, I guess you never learned anything about anything.
But fine, she's suffered so much, she has so much more empathy than she ever did before.
Yes. Well, because that's my point, though, is that, like, fucking Sombra did this big, giant, metaphorical, like, literal, like, metaphorical and literal baptism and... ritualistic sacrifice to kill her old self, essentially. Like, I doubt he thought about it in that way, but that's exactly what it is. It's
honestly,
it's
if this were a scripted program, like, I would really, like, all right, fine, so looking at the notes for the episode we've planned so far, I think we really need to cut out that whole big early monologue, that whole big early talk about exactly this subject, so that we can really nail in on it when Somber, like, puts the lie to it. at this mark here.
Yeah. It's he does this big giant fuck off crucifixion thing and the character does not change from it. In a good story, it's a metamorph like that'd be a scene of metamorphosis, a great like upheaval of character and change. She'd either become more embittered and more violent, or more magnanimous and more holy, which is kind of the way that she goes for the rest of this. But she's just, nothing's different about this character. She's just a violent murderer. And, like, I hate that, because I like her. Like, I like the version of her in my head that I'm constantly assaulted by this horrible nightmare that is the real fucking shit. It's the, like, no, I'm not getting into it, but it's fucking awful. I gotta mosey on to the fucking, like, actual end of this chapter, which is still, like, two more pages of notes. So, they chat with the cultist for a while. The only important parts about this is they repeat the line from the weird fascist speech from the museum of Hoofington Rises, and also that they claim that they have some renewable source of food and supplies that they have access to, which is why they're so well off, is because they just have like renewable something, and that's a weird mystery. But yeah, we get to the finale of this chapter. They race back to chapel, and they think all is well for a hot second, that maybe they got ahead of Sanguine this time, when it's initially described like a yellow bolt hits Blackjack, which I thought was a gun, and it turns out it's fucking Psycho Shy, just hits her like a freight train, and knocks the whole wagon over. God, I hate this scene. I hate the scene for so many reasons, but the main one is I hate that, like, Somber just thinks that, like, Pegasi are supermen for some reason, because she just, like, fucking kung fu martial arts her way through all of the entire crew and kicks all of their asses like they're nothing.
Wow, that's really, actually, incredibly innervating, is the word I'll use. I am irradiated with bad vibes thinking about that. That's
like we are given like a laundry list of all of the reasons why none of them can fight her. Like, Glory's not fast enough. None of their guns are not good enough gunmen to keep a beat on her in the air. 21 can't hit her with explosives. Flash?
Like, what?
Apparently, Pegasi are just super good in this story for some reason.
I've fought Pegasi before. I don't. Like,
so
wait a minute.
The part I really wanted to whine about is that so Lacuna puts up a shield and to try and stop her, and like Psycho Shy just goes through it with like a pair of power hooves, because it's a thing in the story. Don't think too hard about it, but they have pneumatic power hooves they beat people with in the story. But she just crashes right through it like it's nothing. Listeners, this is frustrating, because in the original story, it took a fucking train to get through one of these shields. It took the main character lifting a fucking boxcar over her head with a telekinetic might and hitting an Alicorn shield to break it. This is not supposed to be something you can get through like it's butter.
Yokuna is implicitly one of them. This is an exceptionally terrifying example.
Yeah, she's yeah, she's an exceptionally talented Alicorn. It feels so childish of like, I put up a shield that nothing can get through. Well, too bad, I have fists that can go through any shield. Nuh-uh.
Like, is the excuse that, like, so
no,
like,
there's no excuse. There's literally no explanation.
I'm about to ask, so Blackjack fought this idiot to a standstill last time. Is it because she's bolted to the thing, and she's the engine of the craft they're moving is the reason why, that now that she also has the advantage of cyber limbs, she can't cream
just rip her in half. She's buckled to the whole wagon, and the wagon's upturned right now, so
okay. I mean, that's fine enough for that. It's just too fast for bullets, and like, once again,
too strong for shields.
Once again, I'm real mad on Rampage's behalf, on Horsepool's behalf, because she's the best there is, bub. Like, she's like,
yeah,
she was a chairperson of like the bad guy committee for,
and she just fuck all decades. In like all fights. Yeah. So she does. Rampage is the one that stops Psycho Shy in this scene, but like, it's not because like Rampage is a more gifted fighter, which she is, because she's like a weird zebra martial artist. She just, because she's immortal and can't die, she just eats a hit from Psycho Shy. Like, she just gets hit in the ribs, and all of her ribs break into her lungs, and she's just like, "Ha, idiot!" and just catches her when she does that. My plan all along was to get my ribs broken.
You thought it was horse, but it was I, Dio.
all according to cake. But Rampage just like claws into her wings, and they like plant her into the ground with Rampage's weight. Scene gets dumb. It's dumb, and I know why it's dumb. But yeah, Rampage bamboozles her, and then like Psycho Shy immediately 180s entirely on this whole plan, because she just starts begging and crying over, please don't kill Sanguine, please don't. I don't want him to die. You just have to give him the program. He needs the program. He'll be killed. Because we get filled in that like the people that have been working for Sanguine aren't really working for Sanguine. There are loner mercs from Red Eye, but they're explicitly told that if Sanguine cannot produce results, he's to be killed immediately. So he needs this, like that's the tension wrench on this one. But we also get filled in that Psycho Shy was raised from as a young girl by Sanguine, and that's why she's so attached to him. And none of this matters and doesn't make me feel any sympathy for them at all.
She's such a homicidal, she's been a homicidal bitch up to this point. I don't see why I should care.
Yeah, about I don't her either.
Almost certain lies. In fact, I couldn't be more frustrated with Somber as a writer. And on the plus side, I am so pissed off that I'm gonna do a lot of writing and drawing immediately after this, because I have to like get my like fanfic of a fanfic of a fanfic of a fanfic like moving again, so that I can get to this scene and have the Rampage XP eat this person's face.
I thought you were just gonna say like she just unhinges her jaw and just like a cartoon, just
no,
like
I'm thinking about like how like brutal and like 90s like harsh and like mean this story like sells itself as and thinks it is, and like when you have like the best there's ever been bub the character, like you have your Deadpool XP, like who's 5,000,
you have Rampagerine,
like, the way that I map this out in my head is, okay, everybody is having trouble with her. Our main protagonist, who could definitely deal with her, is, like, has a reasonable reason why they're out of the fight. And you have the Deadpool XP. You have Rampage, like, sort of sitting there, like, smiling like an idiot, watching everybody sort of fumble to stop her. And, like, she knows that, like, the bad guy, Psycho Shy, knows the fight she's coming into. So let's say she came with, like, tools. Like, she came with, like, very specifically an Alicorn shield piercing, do-what's-its. Like, she knows their strategy because they're all famous. And so she takes them apart. And Rampage does what she does in this story and points out that, like, there's, like, a half dozen ways she could have done this, but she did it this way because it was the dumbest. It was the stupidest way she could do it, to teach you a lesson, you disgusting moron, and then bites her face. Like, just start mauling her face with her, like, Rampage starts mauling this person's face with her teeth. And just doesn't stop. Like, the rest of the party, like, she gets to maybe have, like, some sort of, like, monologue, like, bleeding out with you know, like, barely any face left. if she gets to talk at all, because like you get to really like this is a perfect opportunity to highlight, hey, among the crew is an ancient
is a baby
warrior
eater.
who is a terrifying monster.
She's got a master in Wolverine and a minor in baby eating. Like, this is what she does best, and what she does ain't pretty.
But yeah, but I mean, and in part, like, I just want to see the heel humiliated, and like there's two missed opportunities to really humiliate this heel in a terrifying way, and also to, you know, really, really showcase like what a nightmare this person is as a combatant.
Yeah, like they have a time bomb on their side. They've just been lucky to be able to push it in the right direction most of the time. But yeah, Sci-Shy reveals like, yeah, she's raised as a kid by Sanguine, and like this causes Blackjack to like forgive her enough to want to spare her, and everyone complains about it. It's the like Fallout 4 meme. Everyone disliked that because BJ's too soft, but none of them will go against her. So they just like glue her to a tree and they're on their way. And we get told that like, yeah, he hasn't killed the kids yet, but he's taken them hostage because he's like knows that like this is Blackjack's like main roost, and they need like hopefully he can use this as a like actual bargaining chip. Okay, they have a plan for once with this one. So Blackjack and 21 go into like this exhaustive detail of his plan, and it does like the Ocean's 11 like style, like explaining the plan as we're seeing the plan unfold kind of moments. At least that's the way I interpreted it. There's a lot of detail to explain how all of the monster horses get incapacitated, beaten up, tranquilized, in the case of the exploding horse, and all the other griffins. Yeah, their griffins are in the story, don't worry about it. And all the other mercs get taken out with relative ease, because it's not a big tension scene of this whole thing. It's admittedly pretty fun, because it's one of the very few times anything is ever planned out. But whatever, it's still inconsequential. Real plot hours now. They get into the chapel and they find that like Sanguine has shot Sakashi, the zebra horse, in the stomach. He's beaten a bunch of the children. Priest is in a corner cowering because he can't do anything because he's just a preacher. There's a big griffin there named Vermilion, who is combination like guard for Sanguine and also will assassinate him if he fails to like do this plan correctly from Red Eye. He's got a gun to Charity's head, and it basically is like it will, you know, will kill her if you do anything. So of course they all disarm so we get this tense scene of everything's gonna happen. Sanguine then goes on this big fucking dumbass rambling speech about how this could have been simple, this could have been easy, it didn't have to be this way, like you made this so much harder for everyone and now everyone's dead because of you. And he's also like blames all of his own misfortunes on BJ, because like the program would have been fine, but then she had to go and blow up that vertibuck, and like that woke up whatever whatever the fuck is in the core. For realsies, and that's what caused this whole spiral, like downward spiral. And Sanguine basically says, like, I'm all out of options because you forced my hand, you forced my hoof, because he did everything in his power as far as he's concerned. Like, this is all a big rambly thing to make it seem like he's kind of justified in doing this, which of course he isn't, because he killed a lot of people to do this. But
who knows?
Whatever.
What Somber actually, what Somber thinks of his argument?
Yeah. But that none of that matters, because the tension of the scene is broken when, like, Vermilion just, like, gets tired of this shit and fires a rocket launcher at the crew, which does nothing. It blows up the chapel. It doesn't do anything else. They fuck up him and Sanguine pretty... Like, they fuck him up pretty easily. Sanguine gets a spray bullet. Priest tries to take advantage of the situation and try and, like, get, like, wrangle the gun off of Sanguine, but Sanguine just responds nonchalantly. So I've talked about this before. Sanguine is a pink cloud ghoul, or a cloud ghoul. Cloud ghouls have two main components about them that are unique about than normal ghouls. You can only kill them by cutting them apart and decapitating them, and they also breathe out cloud. Cloud, as I've mentioned in a couple of chapters before, was a mega spell that fucks up your like molecular structure and makes everything melty. So he breathes this stuff. So when Priest wrangles the gun off of him, he just takes a big deep breath and just breathes a bunch of pink cloud into Priest's face, and Priest's face just melts off in a, like the most graphic display possible.
Fucking Happy Tree Friends. Welcome back to 90s Newgrounds Flash.
Yep. Face melts off this horse. Also, yay! We don't have to feel bad about Priest and 21 not ending up together so that 21 can just end up with Blackjack later on anyways. Yay! No tension whatsoever! Yay!
Bad story.
But it is a bad story.
Bad times.
Sanguine shoots Charity in the stomach and then bails out a window with her in tow. So they have to go after him. So, you know, Blackjack goes after him by herself. There's a fun scene. There's one of those action movie scenes where, like, he's got the gun to her head. He's like, I'll kill her if you get any closer, you got to give me the program. And Charity's like, she'll never go for that. Like, I'm worth more to her dead than alive. Like, she doesn't have to pay off her tab, if I'm dead. Which, of course, it's the dramatic moment of, like, you know, Blackjack is softer than that, so she has to give up the ghost. So she, like, pulls the pep buck out of her leg. Oh, man, I forgot to talk about that. So, I forgot to talk about that two chapters ago. One of the details and facets of Blackjack's robo legs is that she has a pep buck that is embedded into one of her legs now. So it has, like, a case pit that flips out over it. Otherwise, but she now just has a pit bug in her. But there is kind of that comical moment of her, like, ripping a whole section of her leg to throw at the bad guy. So Sanguine, you know, everything's all the... This is an actual Annie Up moment of the whole story of the actual tension getting. Sanguine now has the program. He bails so that they can attend to Charity's gut wound. We get
so
like a
being forced to do it. Like his handler is long dead, and he's.
Well, no, that isn't his only handler. He alludes that, like, whatever the fuck got woken up in the core, it's now his problem, and he has to deal with it. And, like, it's also coming for him. So, like, it's not the only timer that was on his head. It was just the most immediate one. But yeah, Sanguine's also a shitty villain, but for different reasons that we'll get to in a couple of chapters. But yeah, we get like a denouement scene where it's all after the fact that they, you know, they bury Priest. There's a song played in his honor. He dies fucking hard, by the way. Like he his face melts, but like it doesn't like melt off. He just like all of the front of his face is all melted into shut, so he just suffocates to death. But yeah, they bury him. Charity like kind of apologizes for being like an evil capitalistic bitch this whole time, and like tries to like make up for like putting BJ in this horrible situation now by like shoving some goods into her hands and trying to like part with them, which is, you know, a big character moment because she can't part with anything. And sort of like the sort of like denouement scene that I kind of like is her like staring up at the, you know, the beating core, like the pulsing green glow of the core of the chapter ending off that way, which I just mangled. But yeah, that's the end of our chapter. Got any closing notes before we get to the wrap up?
I got a big question. I was holding it off because we needed to get through. Like we're already running long. After Blackjack beats Rampage allows Blackjack to beat her into paste. What happens immediately after that? Is there anything like an apology or a like?
There's lip service to her going like, I'm sorry, like I didn't mean to do that. And Rampage is like, I understand you're going through some, like you're still like you're very raw to the experience and doesn't really like blame her for beating her to death.
What an irresponsible take!
Yeah, yeah.
Like
what an irresponsible take indeed.
Really should have been. Guess it's lucky it was me.
Yeah.
What would you have done if it was Glory?
Yeah, there's no.
What would you have done if Asshat 21 pressed you on this? Would
yeah, there's no mentioning of that.
Did,
it's like, just like
maybe you should have some self reflection on like your impulse control. Did Are you going to try and convince yourself that you only like let yourself go like this because it was me and I can take that kind of abuse? And also, it's not like that was painless. I don't appreciate being mashed into paste
by robo hooves
as your doctor.
I do not appreciate you killing me. I love Dr. Rampage, baby eater. God, yeah. Yeah, that scene is insufferable for many reasons. It's not even really a character assassination moment. It's just that, like, it's burnt out a lot of my, like, goodwill towards the character. Like, I always say, like, there's basically, like, there's a different character that is what Blackjack means to me versus what the author constantly shows through this, because this is meant to be an incident. It's not meant to be telling of a broader problem of her character. Well, it is, but in like the most insufferable way possible, and we'll have to get to that later on. But there is a part where she acknowledges that she's like, I don't understand why I'm so mad all the time, but like I'm so angry, and it's chalked up to being part of the like fucking like because she's just been violated and she's like not having a good time of it, and she's just trying to like bury that and not get over, and she's not getting over it. But like, there's a bigger problem that's not what it is, and it's really stupid and awful, and just like, like that's the noise I'm gonna make about this. But yeah, that's our episode though. Is there, I guess, anything better we could be reading, Weird?
So you know, it's pretty good, and also out of print for reasons related to capitalism. A company called Margaret Weiss put out a really great Marvel superhero role-playing game. And it was discontinued, not because it was doing poorly, but it was doing poorly as compared to a video game. That apparently the Marvel misunderstood what they were selling their license to. And even though the Margaret Weiss superhero role-playing game was selling like gangbusters and RPG in tabletop RPG terms, it was not meeting Marvel's otherwise sales expectations, and so the license was pulled. But you can still get it places, I assume. You can pirate it. And it's one of my favorite RPG systems ever because not only... I think the best... they're DC characters, but still the best example of how flexible it is comes to mind. You can play Jimmy Olsen and Superman as two PCs in the same group, and they would both be fun to play. Like they would both mix well together. And it's also notable because it has one of my favorite character building sections of all time, which is okay, so you're figure out the premise of your game. Presumably, we built this for Marvel, but you could use it for any number of things. Figure out the premise of your game. Everybody say what character they wanna play, and then you look at the character sheet, a blank character sheet, and then you eyeball it. You just put down numbers that seem to make sense, and then it has a sidebar that says, "Well, what if I have a player who tries to put D12s as all of their stats?" Well, the solution to that is simple. Don't. Don't. It's not a competitive game. Like this is a fun game of pretend with you and your friends. You just don't do that. That would be lame and silly and like not really fun at the end of the day. Like don't. we don't. Trust you to be adults. Like we trust you to have like the responsibility to like play fair. It's that simple. You don't. And I really wish more RPGs like with hard numbers and calculations like that would include that sidebar. Like, what if I have a player who figures out all of the like complicated math involved in the system to build a thing that makes everybody else in the party irrelevant? Turn to that player and say, please don't. Just don't. It's really that simple.
Yeah, it really is. But yeah, we're still pressed for time, so we got to wrap this up real quick. But I'm also gonna recommend a fun game I've been playing for the last few weeks, which is Pirates Outlaws. It's currently on Steam. as an early access game, but it feels mostly finished, which is always an impressive thing to do. If you're like a fan of, if you're like me and a fan of like specifically roguelike games that are about card deck building, like Slay the Spire, then like it also fits that niche, but like innovates on the style in a bunch of interesting ways, and like it's already got like a ton of characters and a bunch of stuff. It's shockingly finished for an early access game. I'd also recommend Later Alligator. Is a game that I haven't played yet, but I've seen really promising. It's a point-and-click adventure where literally every single character in the story is an anthropomorphic alligator, and it looks like a 1920s like New York kind of setting with alligators, which just seems really fun. I'll report back if it sucks or not next week. But other than that, you can write to us. Write to us at you can find me at ThouArtFi on the Twitter. You can find Weird at Weirdington E, I think it is, on Twitter, and at Weirdington ESQ at gmail.com for mail. Weird has finally opened up a Ko-Fi page to accept donations, because Weird is going to die soon. He's going to be crushed by a giant meteor named Housing Crisis. We need those donations so that Weird can continue doing this podcast and continue being a living, breathing, talking jukebox and not die. Yeah, sorry?
Meanwhile, I need to do work on my end to spruce it up a bit and, like, figure out tiers, like a list of things that you guys can bribe me to do. Like,
yeah. I'm still.
You guys could send me emails saying projects that you want to, like,
yeah, yeah, like, guilt trips aside, guilt trips aside, we like my big two big pushes has been bonus episodes where we yell about the idea of doing other somber works, which would be horrible and would hurt me in ways that you could not possibly understand, or learn how to play the incredibly draconian Fallout Equestria tabletop and do live plays of that.
Characters.
Using quadratic equations.
I'd have to read it. I'd have to read it myself.
I'd probably just hack Apocalypse World instead.
We ain't gonna do that labor for free, y'all.
Yeah, that's gonna cost
money. This is already a lot of unpaid emotional labor we are doing on your behalf. And frankly, Fi, I think this is all turning out to be one big mistake.